enemies have taken over the planet. Only one man has what it takes to save what's left of humanity.
Get to the recon!
Take that, you monkey son of a...
Oh, you let a monkey on the board, man!
Joe Booker is... Joe Booker in Fishing with Joe Booker. Produced by Joe Booker. Exclusively on Joe Booker's Muskie 360 app.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Tyler.
Yo.
I'm ready for that movie to come out. What about you?
Dude, I can't wait to watch that movie where Joe Booker is just kicking Muskie butt, man. Rambo style.
It's coming, boys and girls. It's coming. He is the he's the original Muskie guru. Anyway, the Muskie 360 podcast this week was filmed in front of a live studio audience and was pre-recorded. So this is actually recorded last week. So whatever's going on this week, I don't know, because Tyler, me and you are on a road trip.
Road trip.
Road trip. So we've got your user questions. We're going to jump into them. Anything that you guys want to know, we don't have any follow-up this week from the Jared Weeks interview. I'm sure that will bring plenty of follow-up from questions from people, but it just didn't work out. So we're actually not here this week. This was the same day as that podcast. You see what I'm saying? So we're not here, but we're here. And we're going to jump right in after this. It's time for another bait giveaway.
Ooh.
Ooh, la la. So
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
Ooh, la la. Ooh. God, man. I mean, I'm like five or six Pepsis deep right now, folks. So excuse me. So here's the deal. If you guys send me, I don't even know. What do they send?
Huh.
The funniest guru words of wisdom again. Let's go with that. So send me another entry on your best guru words of wisdom. So we need to get back to the podcast roots of being ridiculous here. We did such a dry, Tyler, you've listened to it. I did such a dry interview with Mr. Weeks. I appreciate him doing it. We need to get back to being ridiculous here. Send me your guru's words of wisdom, and I will send you a Junior's Inlines bucktail and some Muskie 360 decals for your boat and or car. Send it to the app. Let's go. The other thing, Tyler, we could come with is, like, we could play the game of, I'm thinking of a number between 69 and 420. What number am I thinking about between those two numbers? First up is Jeff. Jeff says, my first big last couple years is going to be the Chippewa Flowage in August. He says he's, I don't want to see what lodge he's going to, but anyway, he said, you know, for this time of year, should I be looking at weeds, flats, break lines, or points? You know, what's my game plan for the chip in August? You know, he says he's willing to try a variety of baits. Anything particular you guys would start with in August? Tyler, what's your thought? August, Wisconsin, what's sort of like the vibe that you're seeing? I sort of got an idea in mind, but what's your off-the-bat thing for August in Wisconsin?
I mean, I've never fished the chip, but
right.
I mean, you could start. I would start with weed lines first. That's just an easy thing to get knocked.
Low-hanging fruit, yeah.
Yeah, it's just check it off checklist. If they're there, they're there. Whatever, you check it off. Then move on to flats. You move on to brake lines. Check some rock humps. And on Chippewa, I'm assuming there's probably lots of timber. I would check the timber too.
Right.
And I would just go down the checklist. I can't really give you.
I don't think that. I mean, there's
on rocks. Right. You know, I can't say that.
You know, that's the thing is when we start. Like, if I'm thinking Canada, which that's the weird thing is most of the time. Here we go again, broken record. Hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw. About everybody pissing and moaning about not being in Canada. But, you know, in Canada, August, we start thinking about they're going to move out to some rock stuff, some cooler mornings. What I would think, Jeff, is like, you know, if the temperatures are breaking in August, think rocks. You know, if they're not, if it just remains hot, I mean, it could be just like smolderingly hot in August this year. It looks like it might be. You know, that's still a weedy thing. You know, I would definitely check that. I would say by then, here's the one thing I'd say on a body of water like Chip that gets a lot of action. I mean, I would think the bucktail fish have already been bucktailed by now.
That is a good point.
They've been bucktailed by now. That's why I would think hard baits. I would be thinking, you know, some jointed shallow raiders, some crane baits, some slammers. I would be cranking in August just because the amount of pressure that's hitting these very popular bodies of water in July. Yeah, if they're a bucktail fish, they've been bucktailed. So anyway, the next one up is from Wilson. And wow, is the timing impeccable. Wilson says, Wilson. Well, it's okay. Don't laugh at me when I shout, Wilson! Wilson says, when do you think Canada will reopen? I think...
Never.
Never. It's done, boys. Done. No. I've been keeping up with this. Obviously, on the app, you guys have seen updates from this. The deal is this. Canada has a pretty low case of COVID per million. Way lower than us. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, here's the deal. I keep hearing from dudes are going, well, these cities are, these border towns are really suffering from the lack of tourism. Okay, yeah, good point. Canada's on socialized healthcare. So what they're losing in tourism, they're probably a pretty good wash in what they would have in COVID case expenditures. That's the vibe I've heard from the people I know in Canada, is that the money they're losing, they can sort of subsidize people, because if they were having a big uptick, and I'm not even saying like in serious cases, we're not here to get like super political or anything, but just in testing and all the crazy stuff, it's probably a wash. If you know what I'm saying, as far as like what the expenditure on their socialized medical system would be hit. So that seems to be the inside baseball and why they haven't opened it, because financially what they've got to subsidize for the people that are hurting is less than if they had an uptick in cases, what it would cost the country. Any Canadian politicians, if Justin Trudeau wants to come on the Muskie 360 podcast, we'd be glad to have you. But that's what I've read. That's what I've seen. I've got a little insider information coming out of there. But that seems to be the ball game. I think they will reopen when we stop having riots. You know, Tyler, if your neighbors next door were like having a rager, cager, you know, like there's frat boys in the yard and they're fist fighting, would you let them in to have donuts?
I mean, probably.
Probably. You know? You know, I've always said this. Canada is like the nice apartment over top of a crack house. You know? Listen, this is a great looking apartment. I know you guys can afford it. It's right inside your budget. You know, it's only $1,700 a month. Your downstairs neighbors are cooking meth. That's the one bad thing. You go, hey, this is a great apartment. Why has nobody rented this yet? You know, your downstairs neighbors are crazy. Aside of the politics, that would be my thought. Is it's probably a financial decision. My guess, and I mean, me and you have talked about this, Tyler. I would bet you they're gonna open the border after tourism season.
Oh, yeah, they don't care.
They don't care. You know, what's a few towns on the border? You know, Canada is definitely, you know, that middle of the road Canadian area. You know, they're dominated by BC, Toronto, major cities. So I don't have a call, but that's my take on it. For whatever it's worth, I'm probably wrong, but that's the feel I get. Next up is Brian. What patterns do you hunt after the water cools down in early fall, specifically in lava states? Okay, so Brian is referring to, I guess, that article where I had that dude fishing in lava. He said, what do you guys do when the water cools in the lava states down south? Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Tennessee, etc. I do like that. Can we just call it the lava belt? It's just the musky lava belt. You know, the thing is this. Seasonality when it comes to southern musky fishing is far different than what you guys deal with. You know, yeah. And that's something that I talked to Joe about. We talked to the dude about. And it's just one of these deals. It's a different ballgame a little bit. So let's talk fall. Is September really fall? No, it's not. September's still hot.
It's still hot, like halfway through. Yeah. Like the beginning of September sucks.
It sucks so up hot. There. And it, dude, there's days like in September here where it's scorching. So September is just September's an extra month of summer in those lava states. So if you got a summer pattern, stick with it in September. October, November, it's really, for me, it's a shooting match, and I really draw a demarcation line at Thanksgiving. Usually by Thanksgiving, we get that big, big cool down, and we get to serious consideration of water temps dropping majorly. But really what I'm looking at in the lava belt, we're coining a term here, is the first break. So when temperatures actually cool and there is like a marked drop in temperatures, the first break, which is a short little move for these fish. They're not making a major move. They're making a short little move is all. And if we're talking October, you know, in the mornings, those fish are right where they were all summer. And then, you know, if it's cooling down or whatever, they're just bopping around. I mean, if you just have a bad day, you know, those fish, instead of being at 4 feet, they might be at 10 feet. So don't overthink it. They're not going to make some gigantic move in general. I know some bodies of water, that probably is the case. But they're not going crazy because it's not that much pressure on them. It's not like it's dropping into the 50s. You know, I've seen October, you know, mid-50s, 60s. So depending on what year it is and what your surface temps are, don't go too deep too early. You know, really make sure in the mornings, low light periods, high percentage times a day, you're focused on those shallows until, like I said, that November-ish, Thanksgiving-ish time can be the demarcation for me. What's it looking like for you up there, Tyler, October, November? You guys are getting into some blustery cold stuff, right?
Snow. Awfulness. Snow. It's cold.
More misery. It's terrible.
More misery. Just freezing to death.
Just general misery.
That's awful.
Not even great. Just extra misery. Anyway, we're blazing through these because this is the second podcast I've recorded today. Kyle says, what's your favorite glide baits and why? Do you use different glide baits under different conditions? Well, oh. Tyler, you're definitely a JBO glide rater guy.
And yep.
So that's a clear cut and dry answer there, which I'm a huge glide rater fan. I like that bait for when I know there's big fish around. As far as like favorite glide baits, though, on my end of things, can't go wrong with the Phantom, can't go wrong with a Hellhound, can't go wrong with a Shum Shum. You know, baits that I know that have consistency to them. I like some boutique gliders, but, you know, I'm sort of basic. You know, I'm not getting too far afield where I'm buying like $700 gliders. I don't even know if there's a $700 glider. I'm sure there probably is somewhere. But I'm staying pretty basic. Where I differentiate between gliders is just the rate of descent. That's it. You know, I feel like a Hellhound will get deeper faster, just in my circumstances, the way I work it. So the only time I'm sort of like playing favorites among glide baits is just really based upon where that bait's going to run in the water column. I can't really think of anything else because I'm brain dead and I'm pretty Pepsied up. Tyler, what's your input there, you think?
Dude, I'm dead.
He's dead. Moving on. Eric says, can you explain why people don't fish for muskies deeper than 20 feet? What's the reason behind that? I've heard people of catching them in deeper water at times. I've never really, that's not a rule I follow.
No, no, neither do I. It's you gotta think about the thermocline.
Well, that's a thing. And, and if you've listened to the podcast with Jordan Weeks, you know, if we're talking about summertime and, hey, we're concerned about pulling fish out of cold water into hot water, yeah. Aside from that, man, vertical jigging is 20 feet ain't nothing.
Yeah, so, no, that's shallow and vertical.
Yeah, I mean, I've done that stuff in some way deep stuff. So that's not something that I hear to. You may have read or heard that, hey, don't fish deeper than 20 feet. Not a rule that I follow. Especially if we're talking winter or we're talking like, you know, conditions where surface temps are not an issue, 20 feet's fair game for me.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not something that I'm saying, hey, it's off the table. If you've got information or a study or something that says we shouldn't fish them deeper than 20 feet, let me know. Nonetheless, I mean, I've trolled 20 feet. I've got some man stretches that'll get down there and just grind at 20 feet. So that is just a conjectury kind of, hey, don't do that. You got any input, my friend?
No.
We're both brain dead at this point. It's literally, what is it? It's 3:15 in the morning your time.
Yeah.
You know, we've both been fishing all day. We're trying our best here. We're not even actually here, folks. This is a week ago. You're listening to old news.
Dude, we're just clones controlled by robots, controlled by the real Steven Tyler.
Listen.
We're not even
we're
here.
Actually not even controlled. We're actually controlled by Steven Tyler of Aerosmith. Anyway, Rick says, do you have leader recommendations for trolling? Tyler, Andrew, step up to the plate. What's your recommended trolling leader?
2 foot fluorocarbon leader.
Bam.
100 pounds, 230. So you can use it in stained water or clear water. You don't have to do whatever. You got it. That's it. Boom, bada boom.
Boom, shack-a-lack. Slam dunk.
Staying alive. Staying alive.
Take that, Rick. that's pretty much it. I troll 24s. I know some guys, if you're like hardcore trolling, I know some dudes will run like 48s. If I'm just basic trolling, 24 is about what I run. I like fluoro or even hard mono, dirty word, but just for the abrasion resistance and just banging around there. If I'm banging rocks, you know, that's the real question. I know some people worry about fish getting wrapped in the leader while trolling. That is a concern. It doesn't dictate what leader I'm using all the time. But if you're going for a recommendation, 24-inch fluoro will get you done. Michael asks, I'm trying to understand moon set, moon rise, musky major and the minor, and how it pertains to increasing my odds of musky fishing success. Can you help with that? Yes.
We can.
Thank you. Moving on. I'm kidding.
Just ignore them.
Yes, we can. No. Okay. I'll grab it because I'm pretty sloshy here. Why not? I can still see out of my right eye, Tyler.
I'm blind right now.
Left one's starting to go. I couldn't repeat. I don't think I could come up with my social security number right now. it's if I tried my damnedest, I don't know if I can come up with it. But I can tell you moonset, moonrise, musky major, musky minor, because those are far more important pieces of data that my wishy-washy brain can recall. So here's the deal. We've talked about this a bunch, and this is sort of where we all lie, at least the Muskie 360 crew. We use that data as a reference point of when we need to be on best spots. Okay? There's not a set in stone, like moonset today is going to be the jam. Moon Rise is going to be number one. We got to hit that, or the major, the minor. Those are great reference points of lunar or solar activity that's taking place that muskies will use, or excuse me, muskies will have increased activity under, right? It's one of those observations that people have gone, man, we sure have caught a lot of muskies when it's moonrise. We sure have caught a lot of muskies when it's moonset. The data is pretty much indisputable because you have like these weird times where, you know, guys are catching muskies at 3:15 and between 3:15 and 3:30. And then nothing else happens. So the argument if it has an effect or not is pretty much settled. Solar lunar events have an effect on muskies. Joe actually said, and when his big diatribe on this subject, he said, listen, the moon controls the tides on planet Earth. It obviously has effect on bodies of water. So what we're doing with that data is we're using it as times to come back. Let's say me and you and the guru are out, Michael. The three of us are out on a boat. And you move a four-footer. The fish comes into the figure eight, and he doesn't quite hit. He's just, he's just there trailing it. He's just sort of not wanting to do it. What we'll do is we're going to pull off that spot. We're going to go do something else, and then we're going to pick what looks best. We might come back. Let's say moonset's coming up in an hour and a half. That's when we're going to go. Let's say there's a major coming up. That's when we're going to go. We use these as maps to say, plan your day based on these instead of just guessing. And so there's increased activity these times. That's a great way to plan where you're going to be and why you're going to be there. Now, if you're not moving fish, you don't have a big fish lined up, make sure that you're on your prime spots or the stuff that looks the best under these times. Am I covering it, Tyler? What do you think, man?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I look at the Muskie 360 moon phase. I go, well, moon rise is at this time. I better be on my number one spot at this time.
Right. And if the other thing, too, the flip side of that coin is this. Is let's say I don't know the body of water. I want to be checking out the stuff that structurally or cover wise looks the best under those times.
Main Lake Point.
Exactly. And it's just like if I'm looking at a map and going, I've never been to Lake XYZ, but this flat and this point and this blah, blah, blah looks great. Plan your day accordingly. If you just want to go out there and eat a ham sandwich and sort of schmutz around the lake, don't worry about moon phase. But if you're hardcore and you're serious about it, you have an edge. It gives you an edge in knowing, okay, I don't want to go back at 3:15 arbitrarily because I just end up there. I need to wait for a lunar solar event. It's going to give me an advantage because these fish are going to have heightened activity, hopefully, right? Now, it might be that the fish, and I've seen it where, like, moon rises it. That's it, where an entire week on Lake of the Woods, that was the whole shooting match. And so you need to sort of get a read on what they're responding to, but at least you have that information instead of, like, these just crazy arbitrary times. So it's giving you a point of reference on something to hone in on to plan your course of attack. I'm going to move on. John's up next. He says, when fishing the multitude of northern Wisconsin, Vilas County lakes in September, how does wind direction dictate which lake you might fish? Tyler Andrews, this is up your alley. What are you doing with wind, and what are you doing in Vilas County as far as picking bodies of water based on wind direction?
I mean, I don't pick too many bodies of water based on wind direction. I mean, if it's like, say, it's like a crazy north wind, it's like 20 miles an hour, and I'm thinking about fishing a lake that's like directly from north to south and it's blown across it, I'm probably not going to fish that lake. I don't want to get freaking blown off the lake. I would pick a lake based off wind direction if I have documented success on that lake in a specific wind direction. Say, like on a northwest wind, I've caught 3-4 footers on this spot when I have a northwest wind. Well, I'm probably going to go to that lake and fish that spot.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of that was going to be based on, you know, how the lake is situated, you know,
yeah.
Because I mean, and it's one of these things of like, for wind, what we're looking at, I know what you're looking at, Joe's looking at, Chaz looking at, all the other people, it's how is it going to affect forage. And so if you've got a wind, like you said, let's say it's a wind that's blowing out of the south, it's headed north. I mean, on a lake like that, it could shift the forage on that body of water if it's a sustained wind. So
yeah, it could all be set up on one side of the lake.
On one side of the lake. So that's a point, but you bring up the thing of like, if there's a big sustained wind, it can screw up your fishing too. So I don't know if wind direction, as far as like pinpointing like this wind or that wind, is going to really set you up for a higher level of success on certain bodies of water until you really delve into how they're orientated on the map. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what is it? The northeast wind Booker always complains about?
The northeast wind's always a bugger up here.
So that's one you don't want, you know, but you got to, if you're playing the wind, you got to play the way that lake's orientated and how the wind's going to affect it. If you just think about wind going off the surface of a body of water, you know, a wind shift for one day is not going to do a lot, but if it's sustained, let's say you got a westward wind, right? And it's mm-hmm. blowing and it's blowing and it's blowing and it's blowing. After 12 to 24 hours of consistent wind, there will be shifts in forage because the biomass in that body of water is moving.
Yeah.
So it's not about a matter of, it's not as clear cut and dry of like what wind direction is best, what wind direction is harmful. It's a matter of what have they been doing over a sustained period of time and how they affect forage movements. The simple answer of that is with sustained winds, the biomass in the water column will get shifted if the wind is sustained for long enough, which will move plankton and all the way down the food chain to apex predators. That's where I'm at. My brain is hardly working, but we'll get
through. My brain is just a giant fart.
It is a giant fart. We're to the last one. This is a short episode because me and the guru are hamming it up. As you're listening to this, literally me and Tyler are probably somewhere drinking a pina colada. We're not recording this right now. This was last week. We're sipping something in the sunshine. Is that correct, Tyler? What are we doing? What are we doing right now?
I feel like I'm on a beach sipping on like a coconut or something.
Just on a raw coconut. There's no liquor in it or anything. You're just sipping on a coconut.
I'm in my tidy whities, you know, just sitting on a beach with socks on.
Socks, because you're a middle-aged white guy. That's what middle-aged white guys do. Me and Tyler are roaming a beach right now wearing socks and sandals.
Socks and sandals, oh yeah.
That's called dad wear. Tyler, you're a little young for dad wear, but you got the right personality for it. Shout out to all my homies that wear New Balance sneakers. Listen, when your biggest concern is who you hate in the homeowners association, you know you're middle aged. Anyway, the last one was from Craig. He says he loves the podcat. We love the podcat as well. Thank you. Said, my brother and I have made a weekly Pepsi drinking event, and we listen to this together. Keep it up. Wow, Craig. Okay, we're going to have an intervention here real quick, Tyler.
Okay.
Craig and your brother, you need to get something better to do. Okay?
We're a bunch of morons.
We're morons. We're really dumb. Okay, anyway, moving on. He says, I know that the muskies are built as a super predator with their eyes focused forward and upward and rely on vision, their lateral line to hone in on attacks. I'm curious as to what their field of vision is and their visual acuity and how that's affected by water clarity. Okay. Neither of us are expert biologists, but we'll try based on our anecdotal data that we know. From what I understand is that muskie can see pretty long range, but it's not in high detail. So is the closer they get, the more detailed it gets, just like all of us. But the way their eyes are situated, obviously you're right, it's a forward and up viewpoint. right? Things that I can tell you that at least from what I've read, this is not from any, I'm not a biologist, but, you know, they can perceive color and they can perceive pretty good detail. And obviously, like you said, that's completely skewed by water clarity and what's going on the surface. Tyler, do you have anything else? Do you know? Or, I mean, we're trying our best here. We should save this for the next time we have a biologist on, but what do you got?
Well, I got two things. One thing I just can't get out of my head is like a muskie just walking into like an eye doctor and he's sitting in front of that big machine. The doctor's going,
"How's one?
One.
How about two?
One versus three.
Yeah. Oh, I think three was good.
Now, can you read the numbers? A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, squiggle, squiggle, triangle.
Two or three? Three or four?
That's all I can
three
about right now.
Four or five?
What's up with that test, man?
I don't know.
What if you, like, would you come out of there just whacked out? Or, like, are they testing? Do they know, like, can they tell, like, if you have astigmatism? Like, I can tell by the curvature of this guy's eye. Or, like, I've always been so nervous because I'm blind as a bat. And I've always been so nervous when I'm doing that. Like, if I pick the wrong one, I'm going to just be screwed up for the next year in between exams.
Yeah.
It makes me nervous. Like,
two or three.
And you're like, I don't know. This is far too much pressure for me right now.
I think a bucktail, I don't know, a muskie's eye exam would be like, all right, do you see that bucktail there? Read the line of lures.
Read the line of lures. Is that an inhaler? Is that a Booker tail? Is it? You know, we'll delve in with a biologist next time we have him on. That obviously, from everything I've read, obviously it's just from my personal intake of information. You know, they have pretty strong visual acuity to a degree. I don't think they're really reading the name of a bait on the side of it from 40 yards away. So then we'll delve into it. Tyler, this is shaping up to be a pretty shitty podcast. What do you think?
It's just how we roll, man.
I give it. The intro was banging, though. You know that.
I know that. Yeah.
We're trying our best. It's like super late. Right now, he and I are just hamming it up somewhere that's not here. Having the best time of our lives.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to shut up next week. I promise you a super epic podcast. Tyler, do you promise a super epic podcast as well?
I cross my heart and I hope to die.
Thank you. It's truly spoken as a gentleman, folks. Thanks for putting up with the retardation that is the Muskie 360 Podcast. Later.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild. Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Booker Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.